be my greatest performance.
Give it to me.
Here we go.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Welcome to Vox Macabre with Kit Man, a podcast about everything horror, from movies to books, from TV shows to games. Follow us on Threads and Instagram at Vox Macabre and our website, voxmacabre.com.
It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
And now, Kit Man and Vox Macabre.
Hey, what do you say? My name is Kit Man and this is Vox Macabre. It is a podcast about horror. It's my favorite thing, the way our voice person says horror. Makes me happy every time I hear it. Well, thank you so much for all of the attention and stuff on the first episode from earlier this week. So many nice comments, so many cool people. I can't thank you enough. And I'll get to some of those little comments here as we roll on. But again, just super great thanks, and I appreciate it. And I was so excited to get back in the studio today because I think we got some cool stuff that I want to make sure that we're going to talk about. And you know, when you start planning something like this, you have all these ideas, and you got to kind of pace them out, because if you tried to cram everything into one, you'd do, you know, five episodes, and then you'd be at a loss for words. You might be. I won't. Ask my wife. I'm never at a loss for words. I'm the one that stops and pauses the movie to tell her a piece of trivia about somebody in the movie, and she just looks at me like, okay. I mean, she placates me. She's very sweet about it, but... And it's not lost on me that I do it, right? I know I'm doing it. And I'm also at the age now where I've seen basically everything, and I've read almost everything, like, or at least it feels that way. And I've met horror creators and producers and directors and musicians and movie stars and stuff. And sometimes I'll just stop and go, you see that guy sitting on the couch back there? Yeah, that guy's real name is Ed Burroughs. But he goes by the stage name of blah, 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 blah. And I got drunk with him one night in Las Vegas. She'll just be like, whatever, dude. I'll probably die way before her. She's 10 years younger than me. And, you know, I'm a wreck. I'm a train wreck. And she'll probably try to tell these stories to people and they'll be like, baloney. He never did that. She'll be like, I swear. They'll be like, whatever. He did not. I'll come back and haunt your ass if you don't believe me. This is Vox Macabre. Today on the program, we are going to talk about a couple of the polls that we had this week on social media. And we're also going to talk about our featured movie of the week, which is House of the Devil. House of the Devil, I have thoughts. I absolutely love the movie. And there's not a lot wrong with it. There's not a lot of stuff to pick on, which is great. Also, everybody's trying to guess what that movie was, what the movie is, that I said in episode one that everyone else reveres as some kind of the holy grail of horror movies, and I actually think it's pretty meh. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, because that's the talk of social media, according to Dara. She tells me that everybody's asking, what movie is he talking about? And I'll just tell you that it's, when I tell you what it is, you're all going to hate me. Because every single horror fan that I've actually said the words, I don't really like that movie, they all talk to me from that point on as if I'm some kind of an idiotic baby. they've got nothing to say to me that isn't condescending. And that's okay. That's okay. Because what did I say the other day? We're not going to argue about art. I'm allowed not to like something that you like, even if I'm right and you're wrong. Today, I want to start off with talking about one of the polls that we had this week, and it is what was your first experience in the horror genre? And I don't mean like, what did you ever meet a ghost or did a Dracula ever chase you? I don't mean that. What was your horror media experience? You know, was it a movie, a TV show, a book, something else entirely? The results of our poll, of which we had, I don't know, 175. I don't know how many exactly people replied to the poll, but a lot. 59% of you said that your first horror experience was a movie. 28% said it was a book or a story. 9% says it was a TV show. And 3% said something else. And those something else's ranged from people saying horror, like baseball cards, like horror cards, or they got a figurine, maybe they got a Chucky figurine or something like that. That would be weird for that's your first, like you don't even like horror and somebody gives you a Chucky figurine. Here, you know, hi, happy second birthday. Here's a pinhead doll. Go play Cenobites. Let's go play Cenobites. You want to play Cenobites? Let's go send some Barbies to hell. You want to? You want to send Barbies to hell? You do, don't you? For me, I fall into that 9% range, the TV show range. And I'm kind of like, actually, I'm halfway between TV show and book or story. And the reason I say it's halfway between is because I can't exactly pinpoint which was first. Although I'm pretty sure it was TV show. And that TV show would be The Night Stalker. Kolchak. Carl Kolchak, The Night Stalker. That would be the thing that introduced me to the horror genre. Because my grandmother watched that show. And it kills me that that show was only on one season. And they tried to reboot that thing. I don't know, what was that, 10 years ago or 15 years ago or something? They tried to reboot it, and it was just a piece. But the original, with Darren McGavin, Kolchak, The Night Stalker, you can actually find them on Amazon Prime right now, and you can watch the whole series. And I think there's 19 episodes or something. Now, here's the thing about when you watch it now. It is, because it was in the 70s, it's incredibly dated. The thoughts and the things that the subject matter is just very, very 70s subject matter. But that being said, it is what introduced me to the horror genre. I'll never forget the episode where with the shape-shifting monster that appeared to be somebody that you loved. And so you're walking down an alley and suddenly your sweet little grandma steps out from behind a dumpster and goes, "Hey, Johnny, oh, can you help me? I dropped my purse." And then you go, "Grandma, what are you doing in this dark alley?" And she goes, "Johnny, help me. I dropped my purse." And then you go over there and then she kills you. That sat with me for a long time when I was a kid. But my grandma, she was the only one that like championed and would argue with other grandparents and with my aunts and uncles about my love for the genre. In fact, my grandmother went to bat for me against the vice principal of my junior high school. Back when I was a kid, we called it junior high. Now it's called middle school. I was in the seventh grade. And you got to remember, like I told you on the last episode, I grew up in the Bible Belt. Okay. And I was in the seventh grade and I got caught reading The Exorcist. The book, The Exorcist, in the seventh grade. And you may say to yourself, "Wow, that's really irresponsible by your parents." Probably. But I got a hold of the book and I got caught reading it in the seventh grade and they took it away from me. And the vice principal brought me into his office and told me all the horrible things that was going to happen to me because of reading filth like that. And then right in front of me, he tore the book in half. Like he grabbed it by the spine and wiggled the spine and flattened the book out and just tore it right in half. And then he threw it in the garbage. And when I went home and I told my grandmother what had happened, not only did she go down to the school and read him the Riot Act pretty hard. But then she took me to the used bookstore on, and if you went there on Tuesdays, to the used bookstore, paperbacks were only a quarter. And she gave me $2 and told me to buy 8 paperbacks and I could buy whatever I wanted. And I bought 8 horror paperbacks. And I remember I rebought The Exorcist. I bought the Amityville Horror paperback. And I bought a Stephen King, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I want to say it was Skeleton Crew, but that may not be the truth. I have some memory of Skeleton Crew, which was a Stephen King anthology of short stories. And I think that might have been one of the ones I got, but I don't remember. I know it was a Stephen King book. It was either Skeleton Crew or it was Salem's Lot. It was one of those two, I know for sure, because I absolutely loved Salem's Lot when I was a kid. That was one of my favorite stories. And I know I bought Peter Straub's Ghost Story. I remember that one very distinctly as well. That was great. My grandmother, she never really... One thing was great about her is she didn't encourage anything. She never put ideas in my head. But she didn't discourage something that I loved and was passionate about. And it, with any of her grandkids. Whereas the other grandparents on the other side of the family, they were all wackos. And my mom, she couldn't have cared less. And then aunts and uncles, you know, they were all judgy. My grandmother, every time though, I got my ears pierced, both ears pierced when I was 13 years old. And everybody lost their ever-loving minds. Oh my God, you'd have thought that I had, oh. And my grandmother just kept defending me the whole time, the whole way. So, A, thanks, Grandma. She's been gone a while now, but thanks for that. And that was my first horror experience. So those memories are cool to think about, especially now when I'm doing something like this, or, you know, when I, one time I got to meet Clive Barker and Doug Bradley, and I told them that story about my grandma taking up for me. Clive Barker thought that was the coolest thing. And that was pretty cool to be able to relate to that to somebody, you know, on his level. Doug Bradley, if you don't know, he's the guy that played Pinhead in the first, 6 Hellraiser movies? Maybe. And I also saw where he does some kind of Hellraiser experience now, where I don't think he does anymore. I think he stopped maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but he'd literally put on the Hellraiser makeup and do like some live theater experience where that would trip me out, man. I don't know the details on that. I'm going to have to look that up because that's super cool. I like it when people, like, sometimes you see these actors, you know, and they get stuck in a role, and then they sit there and they bitch and complain about it for the rest of their career. Yeah, I never got any other roles because everybody always wanted me to play a monster. But the guys that embraced it, like Doug Bradley and Boris Karloff, you know, they embraced it. Bela Lugosi, Kane Hodder, you know, these guys embrace it. And then they think it's actually pretty cool that people want them to do it more and want to keep going. You know, Doug Bradley, I saw an interview with him not long ago, and he said he'd love to keep going, but gravity has taken his toll and not even the makeup can cover the fact that he's 75 years old now or whatever he is. All right. If you would like to make a comment about anything we ever talk about on the show, you can do so. 458-666-3248. You can call or text anytime. 458-666-3248. Don't worry. Dara said people are worried that I'm going to actually answer the phone and you're going to have to talk to me. It's just a message phone, you guys. You're not going to have to talk to me. Although I'm really nice to talk to, I'm not a scary person. If I answered the phone, we'd probably have a nice, pleasant conversation. But I'm not going to answer the phone. So you don't have to worry about that. It's 458-666-3248. And in just a little while, we will get to some of the messages that people have left. And we'll talk about that. I want to talk about House of the Devil, and we will do that when we come back.
And you could be me for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Now, back to Vox Macabre and Kit Man. We're available on all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to subscribe or heart or whatever.
Yeah, that's super helpful if you subscribe or heart or like or follow or whatever. Every platform has something different that you do to let the podcast people know that you give it, you know? And we appreciate that. Devin from Middlesex County wants to know, he texted the line at 458-666-3248. He says, what is your favorite Universal movie monster? My first gut reaction is to say what I always said when I was younger, and that's Dracula. I was a big vampire guy. Can I tell you why I was a big vampire guy? Why I liked vampires? Because as I said, I got into like horror stuff really young, right? But I took great solace as a very young boy. And at this point, I'm not talking about 13 or 14. I'm talking about 6, 7, 8 years old. I took great solace as a very young boy in the fact that Dracula specifically only bit women. I felt safe. I wasn't happy for the women. It's not a misogynist thing. I didn't want them to get bit either. I was just, as a boy in the 70s, I thought, okay, I don't have to worry about Dracula. Wolfman, I got to worry about. If it's a full moon, all bets are off. Right? I got to worry about the goddamn Wolfman. I got to worry about Frankenstein monster. I got to worry about that guy bashing down my door and running and carrying me off and drowning me in the water. I got to worry about this. I got to worry about the freaking mummy. But I don't have to worry about Dracula because he'd go after and get my sisters. But Dracula is not my favorite, because now as an adult, I can honestly tell you my favorite Universal movie monster is the creature from the Black Lagoon. I don't know why. I don't have any particular reason, but I just really like that movie. And I like the monster, and I like the Shape of Water remake. I thought that was really cool. I relate to that guy. So Devin in Middlesex County, I don't know if that's Middlesex County, like Connecticut or England. I don't know where you're from, Devin, but thank you. And if you guys would like to make a comment, you can do that. Call or text 458-666-3248. We got hellos and how do you do's from people in British, or someone in British Columbia, someone in Tulsa, which is very close to where I grew up. So, hello, how do you do? Thanks for listening, and thanks for following and hearting and whatever. Let's chat now about our featured movie of the week. And our featured movie of the week is House of the Devil. Now, House of the Devil, what I absolutely love about House of the Devil is Ty West's atmosphere that he created. Because the movie was made in 2009. But if you watch this thing, you would swear to God that it was a 1980s movie. Because not only did he set the movie in the 80s, but it's filmed like the 80s. It's filmed with 1980s equipment almost. You know, it feels like an 80s movie. Now, if you don't know House of the Devil, it's set in the 1980s. As I said, it follows the story of a college student who needs money to move into her new apartment, to get out of her dorm room because of her lazy and sexually promiscuous roommate who won't let her get a minute sleep because of all the banging. The protagonist's name is Samantha. She is played by Jocelyn Donahue, and she discovers that she can get this babysitting gig that seems like a too good to be true kind of thing because it's going to pay her $400 for 4 hours. Now, House of the Devil is not what it seems to be. Obviously, it's a babysitting gig that pays $400. You got to think at some point there's a catch. Even in our economy, you ain't getting $400 for babysitting for 4 hours, okay? House of the Devil received critical acclaim, actually. People love this movie. And it's got a standout performance by Greta Gerwig, who directed Barbie and Little Women. And she's just phenomenal. Although she has one of my favorite lines in the movie, Greta does. And it's because, look, I'm not, again, unless it's a movie, like, unless we're going to talk about a movie that you guys may or may not have seen that's come out in the last, I don't know, like year or something, I feel like you might just brace yourself that on sometimes on movies like this, you might get a spoiler alert because I kind of have to talk about the movie, right? But this doesn't spoil too much. So at the early stage of the movie, she pulls up to the house of the devil. Greta Gerwig's driving, and Samantha is riding in the passenger seat, and she's driving a Volvo, a white Volvo. And she pulls up to the house of the devil, and there is a red Volvo in the driveway, and she pulls in right behind it, and she looks at Samantha, and she goes, "Hey, look. Volvo, safest car on the road." And the reason that's funny is because later, she dies in a Volvo. So I won't tell you how, but she dies in a Volvo. So they get there after they see the red Volvo. They go to the door. They knock on the door. And who answers the door but Tom Noonan? You guys know Tom Noonan, right? Tom Noonan is one of these characters that even if he's the good guy, he's the creepiest dude in the scene. If you don't know who Tom Noonan is, Google him up right now and you will know exactly what I mean. Tom Noonan is in Wolfen, which is another one of my favorite movies, The Wolfen. That was one of the books I bought. Oh my God, that I was just talking about my grandma giving me the quarters. It was The Wolfen. That was another one of the books I bought. But Tom Noonan plays a role in The Wolfen where he's actually a nice guy. In fact, he's very animal loving. And he doesn't want people to go and kill the Wolfen. Right? But even in that role, he's the creepiest guy in the movie. So Tom Noonan answers the door and brings them into the house and tells them why it's $400 for 4 hours. And I'm not going to tell you because that would be a big spoiler alert. But the house has some secrets. And there's some secret stuff that's happening. Satanic cult. I mean, come on. It's called the House of the Devil. So it's not a spoiler alert to tell you it's about satanic cults. Now, here's the other great thing about this movie. Because it is set in the 80s, I lived through that time at about that age, a little bit younger than the girls. I would have been in high school at about this time. But I went through that whole, you guys, if you guys did not go to, I don't know, middle school through early college in the 1980s, you don't know about Satanic Panic. Even though that's the name of a movie that we'll talk about at some point, because I love that movie, That was a real thing. Satanic panic was a real thing. And it was especially a real thing, like I said, where I grew up in the Bible Belt. I had to go to my mother and the crazy side of my family made my brother and I go to this talk when I was probably 14 and he would have been 13. They made us go to this talk where this guy, they basically locked all the kids into this auditorium, and this guy talked to us for 3 hours about how to spot a Satanist and how to get away if we were ever captured by a satanic cult. Then he also made us listen to backward radio or backward music and would tell us what the songs were saying backwards. So you play a Led Zeppelin record backwards and it would tell you to go chop your grandma's head off, according to him. Chop your grandma's head off. Right? One thing I remember very distinctly about that Saturday, I had to waste a whole Saturday listening to this knuckle dragger talk to us about satanic cults and backward masking. That's what it's called, backward masking. And I remember they played Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. Another One Bites Dust, right? So they play that and they say, now if you play that backwards, you can hear it says, I've decided to smoke marijuana. I've decided to smoke marijuana. That's what he said it said when you've decided to smoke marijuana. Another One Bites the Dust. They also told me that KISS, you know the band KISS? K-I-S-S, that stood for Knights in Satan's Service. Oh my God. House of the Devil. You got to watch it, kids. If you haven't seen it yet, please go and check it out. It is, it's a fantastic movie. The end, by the way, it's one of these great movies that has a double ending. I love double endings in horror movies. And this one's got one of the all-time kickers. All right, so I'm not going to give it away, but it's got one of the all-time great double endings. It is from Ty West, who's now he's everybody's darling horror director now, right? Because of X and the two and then now three movies in that trilogy. And yeah, oh, The Innkeepers. Have you guys seen The Innkeepers? That's another Ty West. You got to watch that one. But House of the Devil. And then the other thing I love about House of the Devil, and then I'll get off of this and we'll move on to something else. But the other thing I love about it, I have a theory that I've told my wife about a billion times. And now she even, like, because I've told her so many times and it keeps getting proved right in movies, that almost all horror movies, and obviously not all of them, I don't need you to send me an email, go, Living Dead wasn't like that. Like, many horror movies, the reason that everybody gets in trouble always goes back to one of two things. Either the kids or the children in the movie, like the parents' kids or the central character children or some child in the movie does something that they're not supposed to do. And that sets like even something like the first Purge movie, the whole Purge series happened because of the stupid kid that let the person in. It's always a kid doing something they're not supposed to be doing. And that sets across this whole domino effect that ends up with the dad getting his head cut off. And then the other thing, if it's not the kids doing something they're not supposed to be doing, it's somebody doing something stupid for money. And this one's got it. She's got a $400 babysitting job for 4 hours of work. Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be some Satan stuff going on. That's just all there is to it. All right. What do we want to do now? Do we want to take a short break and then come back? Yeah, let's take that short break and then we're going to come back. I've got some horror news for you that we're going to get to that's pretty cool stuff. And then we're going to talk about, since we've been dwelling on the satanic panic of the 1980s, we're going to talk about the best decade in horror. And if I agree with the findings of our social media poll, and we will do that here in just a few minutes.
You may not think of flu as a serious disease, but complications can lead to severe illness, hospitalization, and even death. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends everyone 6 months and older get a flu vaccine every year. Vaccines are available at doctor's offices, pharmacies, and local health departments. Protect yourself and your loved ones this flu season. Get a flu shot today. Learn more at cdc.gov/fightflu.
Now, back to Vox Macabre and Kit Man.
Oh, death and grief and sorrow and murder.
We're available on all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to subscribe or heart or whatever.
Yep. All right. This is Vox Macabre. Our phone number is 458-666-3248. You can text that number or you can send us an email at voxmacabre@gmail.com. In just a few minutes, I want to talk about a poll we did on social media about the best decade for horror. But first, we have a kind of a new feature. Well, it's new. This is only our second episode, Kit, you idiot. Of course, everything is new.
It's halfway through the show, and it's time for horror news.
Horror news, right? How cool is this? Following in the wake of Winnie the Pooh and Mickey Mouse getting their own horror movies, both of which are absolute garbage, The Little Mermaid is next. Originally published in 1837, the original tale of The Little Mermaid is now in public domain. And that means it's up for grabs. Little Mermaid is being distributed by Grindstone Entertainment Group, and the film has officially been rated R. Are you ready for this? For language. All right. See that one coming. Violence. And some nudity. The Little Mermaid gonna be a horror movie. All right. Director Danny Boyle and writer Alex Garland are not screwing around when it comes to their upcoming zombie film 28 Years Later, the third in the 28 Days Later trilogy. Jodie Comer, Aaron Taylor Johnson. Aaron Taylor Johnson, right? Isn't he going to be James Bond, right? And Ralph Fiennes are the first three actors who've joined the cast, which is a follow-up to the classic 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later. Deadline broke the news of the casting, but there's no word on who anyone is actually playing or what the movie's even about. Still, casting three big actors like that is a big change from the first two films with, you know, they went with unknowns. However, the big rumor is that Academy Award winner now, Academy Award winner, Cillian Murphy is rumored to be returning. If Danny Boyle gets Cillian Murphy back, that is a coup, man. How in the world? And you know, I'll be right there. It's one of my favorite movies. And finally, Ishana Knight Shyamalan, M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, has a debut film on the in the works. It's coming out here this summer. But the release date is on the move again. And the new date is a familiar one. 2 months after Warner Brothers shuffled her movie The Watchers back a week to June 14th through the 16th to Father's Day, it's now headed back to its original date of June the 7th. So her dad, M. Night Shyamalan, Shyamalan Ding Dong, has his movie called Trap with Josh Hartnett coming out. And his daughter now, her debut movie called The Watchers, is going to be out on June the 7th. And that, my friends, is your horror news. It is, as our voice person said a few moments ago, halfway through the show. About halfway. We're not a timed thing. Like, if the show goes an hour, it goes an hour. If it goes an hour and 20 minutes, it goes an hour and 20 minutes. Like, who cares? We had a poll this week, the best decade for horror. Now, we eliminated 2010 and the 2020s because I was worried that recency bias would taint this poll. He said taint. I was worried that recency bias would ruin this poll. And now we'll do another poll that will include those later on. And I also removed the 60s and the 50s because I got another thing planned for that. So our poll was, of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, what is the best decade for horror? And you guys said overwhelmingly that the best decade for horror would be the 1980s. Now, I don't know that I can 100% agree with that. I tend to lean a little bit to the 70s, although I think it's close. The fact that it was 74% for the 80s, 20% for the 70s, and only 6% for the 90s, that part of it is a little bit perplexing on why it was so wide. And I think part of it is, like music, we form our horror biases when we're between 15 and 19 years old, just like music. You form these things and they get ingrained in your head. So I'm assuming that this 80s giant victory is because of the demographics of the people that participated in the poll, and that's okay. Now, the 90s, I don't disagree with. The 90s had some pretty awful horror movies. And even the good ones were, you have to do quote good. You got to do like air quotes for good movies in the 90s, good horror movies. I mean, there were some. I'm not going to sit here and completely destroy the entire decade. But, you know, the 70s have Texas Chainsaw and The Exorcist and Halloween. You know, that's just those three alone is enough to sort of skew the outcome there. But the 80s, you know, you got so many good ones in the 80s. You know, all the Nightmare on Elm Streets, the Friday the 13th, some of the Halloweens, you got a lot of good ones. But I want to talk about the 90s for just a couple of seconds because I'm trying to think what would be my favorite 90s horror movie, and I think it's got to be The Ring, right? I think that's, unless you count Silence of the Lambs as a horror movie, which some people do, some people don't, I'm kind of in the middle on it. In that case, I'd put Silence of the Lambs way at the top, but The Ring... What else did we have in the 90s? We had Misery, which is a great movie. I like that one. Tremors, I like it. It's a little campy, but I like it. Blair Witch. You got Scream and Scream 2. The original Candyman. That's a 90s movie I love. You got Bram Stoker's Dracula. Underrated, because a lot of people don't think of this off the top of their head. Is Beloved. I mean, that, right? She's haunted by her... I mean, okay, anyway. We're going to talk about Beloved one of these days. Was Jacob's Ladder 90s or was that 80s? You got People Under the Stairs. That was early 90s or late 80s. I think early 90s. That was okay. That one could have been so much better. That's one of those movies you go, oh, God, that could be so much better. You know what's an underrated great movie of the 90s, horror movie, is A Stir of Echoes. Kevin Bacon's Stir of Echoes. That's a great underrated horror movie. You got the original It. That's Was that the 90s, the original It? I guess it was, wasn't it? So anyway, then you got some cheesy ones like Mimic. I didn't like that. Wolf, you know that Jack Nicholson Wolf? Oh, I watched that and it's so cringy. It's hard to watch. Because you want it to be good, but it just... I mean, it's not atrocious, but it's so 90s. Like, it's 90s, 90s. It's like Devil's Advocate, right? That's another one. That's just a 90s, 90s movie. Anyway, it was an interesting results of that poll. And I don't necessarily disagree with any of the points. I do want to talk about a few movies from the 80s. Two in particular. One actually might be a 90s movie, but we talk about all the time in our genre. We're always talking about the fact that doesn't anybody have any new ideas? Why do we have to keep remaking all of these movies? Does anybody not have anything new? But then they come up with something new and everybody goes, we've seen it before. I mean, the Conjuring stuff is all great, right? Well, but is it new? I mean, kind of. It's Ed and Lorraine Warren and they're from the 70s. So is that, you know, don't get me wrong. I love the Conjuring universe. I'm a big fan of all the Conjuring stuff and the Annabelle stuff, and I'm a big fan. So, you know. But then I start thinking about the fact that there were what I like to call missed opportunities. And I have three movies that I will always champion. And because I have a podcast, I can champion whatever I want. But these three movies in particular are movies that I would really love to see reboots. And not because they were terrible, but because they deserve better than they got. And I would love to see these movies redone with a proper director and a budget. You know, give me a budget to tell these stories. Now, I'm going to do them in reverse order, even though it's only three. And I'm only starting with this one at number three because it's the one of the three that is actually pretty darn good, as it is. And I'll tell you why I think it needs a reboot. And that is John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. First of all, it is one. I am not deriding this movie at all because it is one of my all-time favorite movies. It is, and you'll know what I'm talking about here. It's one of my horror comfort movies. Like my favorite movie, as we talked about last week, all-time favorite horror movie is Angel Heart. My second all-time favorite horror movie is The Exorcist. Those are not comfort movies. Okay, I don't sit down to watch those to snuggle up to the fire on a Saturday afternoon when I got nothing else to do. Those are movies that I specifically go, you know what I want to watch? I want to watch The Exorcist. You know, you get what I'm talking about. You've been there. You know what a horror comfort movie is. For some of you, it's probably Frankenhooker or Ravenous. That Guy Pearce movie about the cannibals. My comfort movie is Prince of Darkness. I love that movie. I saw that movie in the theater by myself. I was driving across the state of Oklahoma and I had car trouble in Oklahoma City. And while my car was in the shop getting the brakes just started smoking for some reason. But while they were getting fixed, I went to the theater and I was, 17 when that came out in that neighborhood. And I watched Prince of Darkness at the movie theater by myself in a strange town. And I absolutely loved it. But let me tell you why I think it needs a reboot. One, because the story is phenomenal. It might be John Carpenter's best movie from a story point of view. Now, you can't count The Thing because that's not his story. Halloween, yeah, but, you know, it's a slasher movie. Prince of Darkness has such a really intricate storyline with science as its core, science and religion sort of mixing together. But the real reason I believe it needs a reboot is because of the cast. The cast is fine. There's nothing completely obviously terrible about it. Some of the acting is pretty bleh. But the cast is made up of people at the time, and I can think of three in particular, and there's actually seven if you want to get into the deep cast, of people that were television actors. And they didn't have like that big screen movie presence. And I think if you could take that story and put it in the hands of a proper director with some big time actors, and they don't have to be huge names, but let's say you put somebody like Josh Hartnett, since we were just talking about him, put him in the main role. It elevates that movie and gives them the ability to tell that story, because the story about the science of the people from the past trying to warn the people in the future about the oncoming devil, about the devil, you know, coming in hot. He's coming in hot. To me, that was such an underrated part of that. And I would love for that to get its own redo. Now, number two on this list is a movie that that I've seen a few times. It's hard to find nowadays. It was directed by Mark Pavia, and it's based on a short story by Stephen King, and it stars Miguel Ferrer, the late great, and it's called Night Flyer. You guys know this story? You guys know this movie? Night Flyer. And it's a movie that desperately needs, nothing against Miguel Ferrer, loved him, but he couldn't, you know, not here any longer, so he couldn't do it. But it desperately needs a bigger movie. As I recall, it's pretty short. The special effects are pretty bad. It didn't have much of a budget, but the Night Flyer story by Stephen King is very, very good. And this movie has so much potential. Like, if you haven't seen it before, try to find it. I'm flipping through TV stations the other day on like Pluto, because I have every app under the sun. I got everything from Apple TV to friggin' Pluto and Freevee and everything else. And I'm flipping through, and there's a whole station on Pluto TV completely dedicated to cult movies. So I'm sure Night Flyer is out there someplace that you can, you can stream it up. It's from 1997. So yeah, it was a 90s movie. And Michael Moss is Renfield. Uh-oh, did I give away part of it? Kinda. It's on New Line Cinema, because wasn't every decent horror movie from the mid-80s to the late 90s on New Line Cinema? And so that's another one that I believe needs its own reboot. But it's got a great monster. And it's got a great story. And then the third one, and this is the one that I will champion until they do it. Like I would literally do a GoFundMe to try to get this movie in the hands of a proper director with a proper budget and time to tell the story. It's from a Clive Barker short story. It was from 1986, and it's another one of my comfort movies, although it's hard for me to watch because I pick it to death. But it's directed by George Pavlov. The screenplay was also written by Clive Barker. Look, man, I'm a huge Clive Barker fan, okay? Let's just get that out right now. Some of my favorite novels are Clive Barker. All of the short story books, the books of blood, the Hellraiser movies I'm a huge fan. But Clive Barker needs to stick, or I wish he would have stuck to just the writing part. Because when you give him the screenplay, there's just things. And when he directed, there were even worse things. But there's things that he does that drive me crazy. And now this movie, I haven't even said the name of the movie yet, have I? The movie is Rawhead Rex. The story by Clive Barker is fantastic. It is in volume 3 of the Books of Blood. And it's a pagan deity that gets accidentally dug up and then has this bloody rampage through the Irish countryside. Now, first of all, if you set any movie in the Irish countryside, I'm going to fucking watch it. That's just all there is to it. I will watch it because those are some of my favorite settings for horror movies. So basically, it's this guy that travels to Ireland with his family to research and photograph items of religious significance. And he goes to this church to photograph some graves. And during a thunderstorm, lightning strikes this like a stone column under which Rawhead Rex is sleeping, I guess, and the lightning wakes him up. And Rawhead Rex is a big monster with a rubber mask. And he goes rampaging through the countryside, killing everybody. Howard, the main character's name's Howard. There's one scene where it drives me insane. He pulls over to let his daughter pee by a tree. And they hear her scream. So him and his wife, not just one of them, him and his wife, run over to see what the daughter is screaming about, leaving their son alone in the van. And then, of course, Rawhead Rex kills Howard's son. So it's kind of your fault, Howard. Like Rawhead Rex, maybe he would have killed you both. Maybe not. Maybe had he not seen the child alone in the van, he wouldn't even come over. I would kill to have this movie remade. The monster in the short story is fantastic. In the movie, he's just a big muscular guy with a rubber mask, and it drives me insane how bad he is. Like, they could have taken, look, couldn't they have like found one other crappy actor and not paid him quite as much as this crappy actor? Like, David Dukes is fine, okay? And Kelly Piper's in it. She's all right. But there's some other actors they could have done. And couldn't they have put another $50,000 or $60,000 into the monster? Come on. Why do you have to have such a crappy monster for such a great story? Oh, drives me so crazy. So, to recap. Reboot this exclamation point. Reboot Prince of Darkness, but only if you do it right. If not, leave it like it is because it's actually pretty good. Reboot Night Flyer. Look, when you got a serial killer flying around, killing people, then taking off in the airplane again, but also he's a Dracula. Okay. And please, for the love of God, somebody come up with the money to reboot Rawhead Rex. And please do it before Clive Barker dies so he can see what it's supposed to look like. And don't let George Pavlow or whatever his name is, don't let him anywhere near it. See, he's friends with Clive. That's the problem. They also did another movie called Transmutations. Also bad. All right. So those are the three that we need to do. And I'm sorry if I get a little passionate about Rawhead Rex. Don't ask me why. I don't know. It's just one of those things I just go, come on, man. To me, that's one of the most frustrating things about horror. And I'm sure it's like this if you're fans of other specific genres like science fiction. I bet if you listen to a science fiction podcast, there's probably some knucklehead like me that says, God, I wish they would just remake whatever movie and do it the right way. And then they would pick out, because you know how science fiction guys are, right? They want to tell you all the science that they get wrong. Horror people, we just want to be scared better. We don't care about all the details like, oh, well, they got the P-137 rockets on that ship there. And the P-137s, well, they weren't invented until 1963. And this movie is based in 1957. So I'm sorry, at this point, I don't think I can trust this director. You and I are just like, can we just scare us better and not have a rubber mask on the damn monster? Please. Begging you.
Gather round, children. It's time for Campfire Tales with Uncle Kit.
It's me on the harmonica, it actually is. No, seriously, that's actually me. So, when I was working at a radio station in the late 90s, I think I was 19 years old, maybe 20. And there was another guy working at the radio station named Bart Allison. Bart, if you're listening. And he was a good dude. I liked that guy. And one day, he asked me if I could do him a favor. It was a Saturday afternoon. I was in Amarillo, Texas, where I worked at Z93. It was a Saturday afternoon, and Bart had to work on the radio, and I didn't have to work that day. And he says to me, could you run over to my house, to my apartment? And I need, I don't remember what it was now, he needed something. I think it was a change of clothes, because he was probably going to go out after he got off the air. Or maybe he had a live broadcast, he had to do it like at a car dealership. We did a lot of that stupid crap back then. Hey, we're broadcasting live today from Townsend Toyota. Come on down. Free balloons for the kids. Anyway, he says, could you run by my house and pick up this stuff, whatever it may or may not be? I said, sure. He says, the front door, I think, is unlocked. If it's not, there's a key up on top of the door jamb. You can just reach your hand up there and grab it. Well, yeah, cool. I'll go over there and get it. So I go over to Bart's house, and I don't know why, just kind of out of habit, I guess, I knock on the door, even though I know he's not home, like an idiot. And I could have sworn I heard somebody say, come in. And I thought, uh-oh, he's probably got a girl over here or something. Sounded like a female voice. So I jiggle the doorknob, and it's locked. I knock again. I say, hello. This time, no answer. So I knock again. I didn't exactly cop knock it, but I gave it a good knock. No, nobody. So I feel around for the door jamb, and I'm up at the top there, and I find the key, and I open the door. I go in. Okay, it didn't creak like that. I just, you know, for effect and whatnot. So I go in, And there's a lady sitting in the kitchen. And I said, hey, I'm sorry. Hi, I'm Bart's friend, Kit. I just came over to get him a change of clothes because he's got to go to Townsend Toyota and do a remote after this. So don't pay attention to me. And she looks at me and just kind of smiles. I was like, okay, cool. And so I go into Bart's room where he told me to get his clothes, and I got them, or whatever it was. I don't remember what I had to get. And I get everything and I leave, and she's still sitting there, and I'm like, okay, thanks. And she like looks at me and kind of smiles, and she was reading. She was older. She was, you know, Bart's grandma or whatever. So I leave and I go back to the radio station. I take him his bag that's got whatever it was in it, his clothes, so he could go to Townsend Toyota. And I said, hey, I saw your mom or your grandma or whoever was there. And they didn't say anything, but I just wanted to let you know that I had to let myself in because I knocked, but they didn't let me in. So I just thought I'd better tell you, you know, in case your grandma says, hey, some guy came in and was rooting around in your bedroom. He goes, what are you talking about? I go, well, there was an old lady sitting at your table. And so I just, I waved to her and she kind of nodded at me. He goes, there's nobody there. Nobody lives with me. My grandma is dead. My mom lives in Dallas. There's nobody here. I go, what are you talking about, dude? There was an old lady sitting at your dining room table. He goes, you're out of your mind. I'm like, dude, I'm not making it up. I'm not a liar. I went and got your bag full of clothes so you could go to Townsend Toyota. And there was an old lady sitting at your dining room table reading a book or something. He's like, you're out of your mind. I'm like, whatever, dude. And I thought he's kind of with me, you know, messing with me at this point. About 2-3 weeks later, I was at work and I see Bart. He's coming in for his shift on the air, and I was just finishing up mine. And he said, hey, remember a couple of weeks ago when you said there was an old lady at my house? I said, yeah. He goes, yeah, I think that might be a ghost. Yeah, okay. Now, at this point, you have to understand, I've been seeing them for a while. Like, I've been seeing ghosts and stuff my whole life. Pretty much since that Pea Ridge incident. I'm one of these people that's pretty open to that stuff, right? Like, even here just 2 days ago, at my own house, I have two pair of sunglasses. I know exactly where they were hanging. I turn around and they're gone. I text my wife, have you seen my sunglasses? She says, no. I said, well, they were both right there. There's these two pair that I want, pair of John Varvatos sunglasses I really like, and this other pair that I wear when I play my guitar, and they were right there. And she goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't seen them. I tear my office upside down. I tear the studio upside down. I go over every shelf, every book. I'm looking everywhere. I can't find them. Right before I came into the studio, I took a shower. And then I went outside, did some stuff in my car, went to the studio. And as I walk in the front door of the studio, those sunglasses are sitting on the shelf. The same shelf that I tore apart. Literally took everything off the shelf. And those same sunglasses are sitting there. That kind of bullshit happens to me all the time. So when Bart says it might have been a ghost, part of me is like, yeah, of course it was. And then the other part of me is like, come on, man, really? Why do you say that? And he said, there's an old lady that lives next door to me, and they found her dead body. And she'd been dead like a week and a half in my apartment complex. That's just great. That will do it for the program for today. Thank you so much for paying attention to the nonsensical ramblings of an insane mind. And I hope you are enjoying listening to this as much as I am enjoying bringing it to you. Thank you to Dara Scope. our social media director. She's the one you're talking to 95% of the time. If I ever jump on social media, it'll almost always, I'll say, hey, man, it's me, Kit. Because I don't want her getting blamed for something I say. And to Roth, who helps out with the audio mixing and the engineering and whatnot. Another episode comes your way on Monday. I'm not sure exactly what episode we're going to do in episode 3, but I have a really good feature movie that I think you guys are going to dig. If you enjoyed the House of the Devil thing, make sure you go listen or go watch House of the Devil at some point. It is on Amazon Prime, I believe, and some other places as well. And other than that, I will see you next time around on this very channel. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Vox Macabre with Kit Mann. Follow us on Threads and Instagram at Vox Macabre and our website, voxmacabre.com. We're available on all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to subscribe or heart or whatever.